لمع البرق اليماني عن حبيب قد سباني، فتذكرت اجتماعا فشجاني ما شجاني.
لمع البرق اليماني عن حبيب قد سباني، فتذكرت اجتماعا فشجاني ما شجاني.
مشتاق بصدر اللهب من نار الجوى عجب،
مشتاق بصدر اللهب من نار الجوى عجب.
دمعي على خد سكب أشكو يا لي، دمعي على خد سكب أشكو يا لي.
All praise and thanks is due to Allah. I ask Allah the Almighty to increase the honor and raise the rank of our dearest Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, his noble relatives and companions, and I ask Allah to protect the nation of Prophet Muhammad from that which he feared for it. A big hello and a very warm welcome to everyone who's tuned in to the Muslim Community Radio this afternoon via the airwaves of 92.1 FM or live streaming platform 2mfm.org. Once again, it brings me pleasure to be joining you from the 2MFM studio for yet another episode of the show that keeps you connected, brought to you today by your Community Connect host, Ola. Although feeling a little lonely here in the studio without my dear co-host Nadia, I am excited though to have your company for another insightful episode of the show. And I suppose many of you are wondering at this point what the show will be delivering today, considering I don't have my trusty partner with me. Indeed, I may not have my trusty partner with me, but I do have an interesting discussion with someone else lined up for you, and that topic is one that most of us can relate to. The second question you may be asking is, what's the topic? Well, for that one, you'll need to stay tuned. Relationships, relationships, relationships. From the day we enter the world, our existence is largely dependent on the relationships we develop with other people, beginning with the one we have with our parents. From there, we go on to develop immediate and extended family relationships, professional relationships, as well as intimate relationships. And each of these come with their own set of expectations and standards. However, what all these relationships do have in common is that none of them come with an instruction manual. And so we plod on through life trying to make the best out of the relationships we have with others. This doesn't mean, however, that our relationships will always be smooth sailing. In fact, in every relationship you have, you wouldn't go wrong in expecting some humps and bumps and occasionally some serious turbulence. Among the realities of life is the fact that almost all relationships are subject to testing experiences that measure their strength and stability from time to time. Some relationships are bound by strong ties that can survive the ups and downs encountered during the course of life, while others buckle under the pressure exerted by difficult circumstances. If you really come to think of it, the nature and dynamics of different kinds of relationships is actually quite amazing, considering there are no two people in this world who think and behave in the same manner. We are all born with our own mindset, our own personality traits, and our own perspectives. And getting any two people to agree on every aspect of life is a far stretch. But somehow we manage to make all these different relationships and interactions with other people work despite our numerous differences. That is, most of the time and in most cases. Despite our best efforts to compromise and negotiate our way through our various relationships with others, some of these relationships just aren't meant to survive. Our blood-tied relationships are usually among the strongest of relationships that we will ever develop, hard to break and built on a significant degree of loyalty that's difficult to sever. And perhaps that's because people related by blood are often raised in similar environments and with the same kind of values. But the same is not necessarily applicable to friendships, professional relationships, and even intimate relationships. And so by nature, these relationships usually require a little more work to keep them going. Intimate or personal relationships in particular require a certain level of skill to keep them afloat, as they often entail a union between two people who have been raised in different environments and possibly with differing values and life goals. And although some common factors may bring a couple together initially, common factors aren't necessarily enough to keep them together for life, which is why we see things like separation and divorce occurring even after many years of marriage. That's because with time, couples may encounter challenges, changes, and may eventually discover that their differences outweigh the things they have in common, things which can act as a breeding ground for some major problems, which can ultimately lead to the complete breakdown of the relationship. But it's not the challenges, changes, or personal differences in themselves that doom the relationship to failure. It's really more about the way in which couples respond and deal with these issues that truly makes or breaks the relationship. So it's important to set the relationship on good foundations to ensure that it can survive the test of time. Thank you. issue of healthy relationships, what defines them, what makes them go sour, and how we can rescue them before they completely fall apart. I'll be speaking with family and couples therapist at Relationships Australia New South Wales, Jennifer Douglas, who will join the program shortly to load us up with some practical and professional relationship advice. That's after the break. Do stay tuned. Distinguish between healthy and unhealthy relationships, and to help us understand what factors shape a relationship into what it is and how to ensure that a relationship can survive the test of time. Today I'm speaking to Jennifer Douglas, couples and family therapist at Relationships Australia New South Wales. Jennifer, good afternoon and thank you for taking the time to join me on the program.
Good afternoon, Ola. Lovely to be speaking with you.
Thank you very much. Now, I'll start off on a point made by many people, that compatibility is one of the key components of a successful relationship. What does being compatible mean, and can it really mean the difference between the success or failure of a relationship, given that many people also say opposites attract?
So I think to think about compatibility, we just probably need to note that, you know, in part that might be influenced about the point you're at in your relationship, because by nature we're often drawn to similarities, and early in our relationship we're more likely to see similarities than differences. But actually part of the development of a relationship is its capacity to actually hold the differences in each partner and to be able to manage those differences without that feeling like it undermines the relationship. So it's important over time we would need to be able to not feel that we need to hold back, that we can actually even bring, you know, vulnerable parts of ourselves to the relationship, and that won't threaten the relationship. And that's actually part of how a healthy relationship might evolve over time and mature.
Okay.
We can't, of course, know each other truly at the beginning part of a relationship, and that's why often people talk about the honeymoon period.
Yes.
But it's probably true that for some couples we may in fact be attracted to parts of ourselves that we might have even disowned, or we feel we might need to grow in ourselves. So it is common that, you know, perhaps you might be drawn to someone, if you're quite shy, you might be drawn to somebody who's more extroverted, just because that'll help grow that capacity and you can then go on to socialise together, or, you know, one partner might be more spontaneous and the other more considered in their thinking. But the important thing really is about the way that you value and respect those differences, rather than getting in a competition about who's right or which quality is better than the other, because in a sense they work together to really bring a more whole and completed relationship.
Absolutely. Now, other than compatibility, what are some of the core components of a successful or healthy relationship?
So, I mean, at the most fundamental level, and this is not just about our intimate partner relationships, but with friendships and, you know, even relationships with our colleagues, there needs to absolutely always be a fundamental level of respect and dignity that's held in the relationship. So looking for where power is used in a responsible way, not using your power to harass or exert that over another person, but that those relationships do attend to and are respectful of the needs of the other person that you're relating to. And you know, if we're talking more about intimate relationships, the willingness and the wanting to actually, what we call, attune to the needs of the other person, so that you care about what you, first of all, you're aware about how your actions impact on the other person, but you also hold an importance about the feelings of the other person. So you don't go with an intent to hurt them or not respect their needs. But you're sensitive and you're also open and curious about those needs. In the bigger picture, there needs to be some type of shared decision making. And that there needs to be also some openness to being influenced by your partner. So if you come in with a view that your way is the right way and you're not open to the experience of your partner and accept some of that influence from them, then that's really likely to escalate a lot of conflict, but also likely to lessen the self-esteem of the other person, because in the interaction they won't feel their views matter or their needs are important.
So a certain degree of empathy is required in order to see the perspective and understand the needs of the other person in the relationship. And also there needs to be a certain degree of trust, that you trust their opinions as well, and you trust that they're going to act in your best interest and do the things that are not going to bring you harm.
Yeah, I think you framed that very well, and trust is where we build safety in the relationship. So by necessity, relationships do make us vulnerable, because we do need to trust the intentions of our partners. And so if there's no safety, either because someone keeps on betraying your trust or acts in ways that is harmful to you, then of course you're never going to feel safe, and that also then might really contribute to the decline of the relationship. Healthy relationships do need to have a good foundation of safety and trust in them.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that we've identified the core components of a healthy relationship, what can you tell us about some of the key issues related to relationship breakdown? I'm sure in your years of experience, you've encountered your fair share of stories about why relationships break down and what's contributed to the breakdown of a relationship.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, there's two things that can happen just in the ordinary everyday relationships, is that relationships can be stressed from outside causes. So, you know, having children, it can be very stressful, absolutely financial difficulties or housing problems or issues around the health of one or both partners. If there's other issues around, you know, one of the partners has got an addiction problem around drinking or substance abuse, all of those things can serve to really stress the relationship.
Yeah.
How couples pull together and are able to problem solve together to manage those stresses. Sometimes we can have a little impact on the actual stress coming into our life. I mean, if somebody's got a chronic health problem, that's a problem that just has to be managed. Similarly, if you've got children, you can't just get rid of the children. You've got to find ways of pulling together. I think one of the things that probably gets in the way of that is sometimes couples don't pull together early enough. They may not even start to recognise there's a problem and, you know, seek out their other partner to work as a team around dealing with that issue, that they pretend it's going to go away or bury their head in the sand, or they may even try and distract themselves with other things. So sometimes someone might have problems in their relationship but then put all their attention to an outside interest or overwork or turn away from the relationship. So you've got to be, both partners have got to be turned towards the relationship in the first instance. I guess the other thing is that, you know, there's a very well-known couple therapists, John and Julie Gottman, who talk about there are ways in which we can interact in a relationship also that can either weaken the relationship or strengthen it. So if you've got patterns in your conflict where, you know, there's a lot of criticism or high levels of defensiveness or stonewalling, or even if the very worst, about high levels of contempt for your partner, well, clearly they're not going to be in service of working together as a team and dealing with some of the challenges.
Indeed. I have to verify that, because in an article which featured in Psychology Today in 2013, John Gottman has listed contempt as one of the top indicators that a relationship will fail. So what kind of examples can you give us about that kind of contempt? I don't think many people understand how contempt can exist between, you know, a couple who is married.
I think when contempt is likely to show itself is when, in fact, the emotional bank account that a couple has, the goodwill, has really hit rock bottom. And so, you know, before we were talking in healthy relationships, the idea that you actually care about the impact of your own behaviour on the other, that you act in their interests, that you're interested and sensitive to their feelings and needs. Well, when contempt has really taken hold in the relationship, you're more likely to be operating from a place of disregard, and that empathy that you talked about before is often absent. because putting yourself in your partner's shoes is a really important protective factor for the relationship. But if there's no empathy and contempt comes in, well, that makes it very difficult to resolve and pull together as a team.
And could signs of that be, you know, being easily irritated by things that your partner does?
Well, I think you can, yes, lose perspective about, for a start, one of the things that can happen is that you stop seeing your partner as a person and you think of them more like an object, that they're not doing what you want, or an ideas of ownership to feelings of contempt. So if someone doesn't do what you want and they're not behaving in the way that you think they should, then that can really fuel a very unhelpful sense of entitlement, and that includes any feelings of entitlement to behave badly or even hurt your partner.
Really a recipe for relationship breakdown once you get to that point.
Absolutely, yeah. Causes a lot of harm.
Yeah, it does. Now, given that every relationship encounters its share of problems over time, it's sometimes hard to determine when a couple may be experiencing a mere rough patch or whether recurring problems are a sign that the relationship is falling apart. What could be the signs of a relationship that is in serious distress, Jennifer?
So a lot of people think, first of all, that conflict in itself might be a sign of distress in a relationship.
Yeah.
In and of itself, sometimes conflict can be good because it might actually mean you're struggling to problem solve together and you know, you're negotiating and you're making compromise. But, of course, over time, the conflict itself, if it escalates, and certainly if it escalates to, you know, name-calling or demeaning behaviour or putting your partner down or intimidating them, they're all barometers or red flags that the conflict is occurring in a way that's harmful. But sometimes also it can just be that people get very worn down. So having the same arguments over and over again without any sense of resolution or feeling that you're addressing the issue, there's often in that sense there's some miscommunicating going on, where rather than the couple feeling heard after a conflict, they in fact feel further apart in their negotiation and can feel quite hurt or a big sense of being misunderstood.
Yeah, so it's the end result really of those conflicts that determines.
So conflict in and of itself is not necessarily an indicator that the relationship is in decline. It could be a bit of a warning sign, but the interactions around that conflict are probably more important rather than having an argument. Some couples actually are very emotionally expressive and will quickly argue, but it doesn't escalate to harmful places. And also, you know, once the conflicts happen, things settle down fairly quickly and the relationship can proceed as normal.
Okay. Now, we sometimes hear the term toxic relationship. Is there really such a thing as a toxic relationship?
Well, I guess the word toxic implies some level of harm or poison to the person. And I think certainly if we think about some of the dynamics, can certainly be very harmful. You know, if a relationship is one in which it really is stripping you of your self-esteem and your self-worth, if it really exacerbates mental health issues, so for example that you become increasingly anxious or depressed as a result of the relational dynamic, certainly if you feel threatened or intimidated or humiliated or isolated, of course all of those dynamics have very serious harmful consequences for people in them.
Yeah, obviously not a good relationship to have. Now, although many relationships fail due to the existence of recurrent and unresolvable issues, there are instances where couples choose to go their separate ways due to the fact that they have just simply grown apart. There's no major issues, we've just grown apart. So what issues in a relationship can cause couples to grow apart?
You know, before I was talking about that idea about the partners need to be turned towards each other. So if you're not looking and noticing your partner, you can just drift, literally drift and become more distant with each other. That idea that relationships need attention and nurturing, you know, it's not just the individuals in the relationship, but the relationship itself needs to be nurtured, and that we talk about sometimes an emotional bank account. So you've got positive memories and fondness and regard that the parties can draw on when things get tough. Sometimes, you know, somebody having a extramarital relationship or being involved in an infidelity can cause harm in the relationship. But I want to give the message, it's also possible for relationships to recover from those hurtful circumstances, providing the parties are willing and puts the effort into making the changes that would ensure that situation doesn't arise again.
Yeah, and I think to some degree it has also something to do with the level of priority you give to your relationship and to your partner as opposed to all the other things and aspects of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about aligning your values. So if you, profess that your relationship with your partner or your children is the most important thing, we need to act in ways that are congruent with that. We can't just say that as an idea and then, our behaviour or actions don't actually mirror that. And everybody, one of our core needs is, for a sense of belonging. We're social beings. And so feeling important to the other is really fundamental for the nurturing of a good relationship.
Yeah. Now, to what extent do changing roles and circumstances throughout a relationship affect the quality of that relationship? And what factors determine whether or not a relationship can survive the test of time?
One of the things is basically really any significant transition point in a relationship can be a point of disruption to a relationship. So even ones that you may be looking forward to. So partners becoming committed and living together and adjusting to the change in their living arrangements, bringing children into a relationship can be very stressful and involves a big role transition. Mm. Similarly, even around changing jobs or needing to relocate for work, so where the couple have got to make some big decisions, all of those transition points can put added stress on a relationship. Yeah. And then you can add to that, there might be some unpredictable stresses, like one partner may become unwell or there's a death in the family or somebody loses their job. Mm. Those transition points can also put, very significant stress on the relationship. So it's a bit like weathering yourself through the storm in some ways.
Yes.
And this is where you need to be able to bring a sense of all those things we talked about, what constitutes a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
So, having opportunities to talk about the impact of how a change is affecting you, to be able to negotiate if there is some need for changes in role. Clearly, if you have a young baby, then your partner might need you to step up more and take a more active role in household tasks. Yeah. So it's that willingness to be flexible and adaptable to the change that really helps people through that.
Yeah.
But also it's important that your partner feels they're in there with you, that they're not isolated, they're not alone. One of the reasons we partner at all is to have a sense that someone's watching our back and is in the struggle with us.
Yes.
So making sure that both of you feel that, you've got each other's backs, I think, a really important thing, and that you're going to hang in there with them.
Yes.
No matter how tough things are going to be.
And again, those issues go back to, how much trust you have and that communication process, how clear
sure.
the communication is between the two of you.
So, if you have a circumstance where your partner's experienced that you weren't there for them, in fact, they may even feel that you abandoned them in some way, then the next relationship challenge or life circumstance that the couple have to face, they may not be able to trust you bringing the support and the presence that they're needing.
Indeed. Now, Jennifer, the next issue I wanted to touch on is the idealised or unrealistic expectations. A lot of couples, or a lot of people, get into relationships with some unrealistic expectations of what they can get out of that relationship. How is that possibly detrimental to the nature or to the health of the relationship?
Well, I guess, we could certainly say that relationships now do hold the burden of much more expectations than perhaps they may have in previous generations or even in certain cultural or social situations. So, the idea that your partner will be your best friend, your best provider, your everything, you need to be mindful that it's helpful and healthy to also have resources outside of the relationship. So one of the things that can really support a relationship is the fact if you've got a good network of support around you from your own family and friends.
Mm.
And that needs to be kept in balance because you don't want to be privileging everything outside of the relationship and not spending enough time in it. But making sure you have a good network of support is a really important thing. Mm. It's also about being honest with yourself and really recognising that, in fact, you may be being unrealistic or being even demanding about wanting something from your partner that they're never going to be able to provide. For example, if you've partnered with somebody who's not as social as you, they may be more naturally introverted or, you know, less comfortable with big social situations, they're not likely to be able to, you know, do a 180-degree flip and become something completely different.
Yeah.
But it's about just both parties making enough of an effort to make sure that you don't become what we call too polarised, that you're still in connection with each other.
Yeah.
Not that you have to be the same, but you're still in connection with each other around those differences.
Yeah, and I guess one of the key things here is not to compare your own relationship to the relationship of other people around you, because a lot of times that does happen.
And I guess, you know, because of the way social media is, and even, you know, we have a lot more docudramas and reality TV shows where we can feel we now have a better inside view of relationships, but yeah, they are distorted. It really doesn't give you a true sense about what the fabric of relationships are like. And yes, I think the intention there is just looking inside your own relationship and being committed to making the best it can be rather than comparing it to others.
That's right. Now, we touched on toxic relationships earlier, and we know that no relationship is immune to experiencing problems. However, the nature of the problems experienced within each relationship is what really differs from one case to the other. Now, some problems are small and are easily overcome. Others are very destructive. Among these destructive problems in some relationships is domestic violence, something that nobody entering a relationship ever really anticipates will occur to them. But it does on some occasions. And the best way to avoid falling victim to this is by identifying the risk factors and signs. So, Jenny, what factors or triggers may contribute to domestic or spousal violence? And is there any way of identifying these behaviours early on in a relationship?
So there are some predictive factors, but we need to be clear that it's not a singular causal thing. And also to say that intimate partner violence can show itself across all demographic groups and all age groups. So sometimes we can think there might be some added risk in terms of poverty and other things, but to say that it's only people from disadvantaged backgrounds that experience violence is really obscuring the reality.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of warning signs. Certainly if a partner comes from a family history of domestic violence, mm-hmm. that might be a risk factor. On the other hand, someone who's had a history like that could be very committed to ensuring that that dynamic doesn't come into their own relationship.
Yeah.
There can be situational factors, so is a threat to separate in some relationships can escalate to violence. You know, before we were talking about behaviours that are strong indicators of what we call a coercive dynamic,
yeah.
where the power in the relationship is against the other. So early indications may be violating somebody's privacy, making intimidating comments, mm. harassing somebody, isolating them from their friends or family, acts of humiliation.
Exhibiting controlling behaviour.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Mm. And those controlling behaviours, they can show themselves in a number of different behaviours, but at the core of them, those abusive and coercive behaviours are present. That's the circumstance we'd be most concerned about.
Yeah, so they're the red flags. Upon seeing those red flags, what should be the appropriate course of action?
Well, I guess it's a question of degree,
yes.
And the intensity and frequency around these things. I think it's really important to note that abusive dynamics, you know, sometimes people just think of, well, sometimes things are good in the relationship and sometimes they're bad. But in fact, if you start to see a cyclical pattern, which over time is just being constantly repeated, there may even be elements in that pattern where there's a bit of a honeymoon period or the person shows remorse and apologises and promises things will change. And
yeah.
maybe in the first instance you would give them the benefit of the doubt. But yeah. certainly if that pattern starts to repeat itself and there's any signs of escalation, that really should be a sign that you need to get some outside support.
Okay. I'm glad you say get some outside support, because usually the first solution that comes to mind, or that, you know, many people may advise others to take, is, you know, you need to get out, you need to leave this relationship, which, you know, really should not be the first point of call. You should try and resolve the issues and help that person overcome whatever issues are causing them to act out in that way.
I mean, the important thing is about the naming, what's happening in the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it's very understandable. You know, interestingly, one of the things that particularly acts as a barrier for women in particular to seek support is that they will feel that they're going to be judged for staying in the relationship, or that they'll experience some type of victim blaming, that some way they're to blame, or
yeah,
or they're going to be judged in some sort of way. So as a community, we've got a big response if somebody is reaching out to us, either as a family member or as a work colleague, that while we want to bring accountability to the behaviour of the person who's behaving inappropriately or abusively, we don't want to go into victim blaming and bringing judgment to the circumstances of that person as to why they're staying or why they haven't left yet. You know, that's not going to be helpful to anybody.
Yeah. Talking about why people don't leave, what do we know about the reasons why some people feel compelled to stay in such a relationship?
I think you said earlier, people don't choose to go into violent relationships. Most people come in with the hope and expectation of having a loving and long-lasting relationship.
Yeah.
So that, you know, by nature, we wouldn't seek to put ourselves in that circumstance. But there can be circumstances where the power differential between the partners can grow over time. So, for example, somebody, because somebody's young, because they're pregnant, because they've lost their job, so they might have high dependency needs, so they're just not in a position to step away. But if you think about some of the dynamics of abusive behaviour, is also in the way that it can attack somebody's self-concept and self-esteem and lead to significant mental health issues, including depression or even post-traumatic stress, that actually disables the person from leaving.
Yeah.
They may even come to internalise a belief that this is the relationship they deserve. But, you know, the risks of leaving can also be very great. We know that when couples separate can actually escalate the risk of violence. In some circumstances, if the person leaves the relationship, they will be rejected or marginalised from their own family and community.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to look at each circumstance individually, and in some circumstances, there can be a lot of constraints to leaving.
Yeah, indeed. Now, in your opinion, given the right advice and support, can a relationship survive through and recover from something like abuse or violence?
Well, of course, I work in an area where we work with people who are interested in behaviour change, and Relationships Australia actually runs a program particularly for men who are looking to take responsibility for abusive behaviours.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, at the bigger level I would say yes, but I would want to bring a cautionary message around that we always have to privilege the safety of the people in the relationship, and particularly children, because they are the most vulnerable, and that, you know, separate to the motivation to staying, that in the short term, for everybody's safety, including protecting the person who's been causing harm from getting into a more difficult situation or perpetrating more abuse, sometimes leaving or putting yourself in a safe place can be the very necessary first step. Sometimes in that taking that step, you know, the person who's been using abusive behaviours will see that as a big wake-up call. They'll recognise what their family and their partner means to them, and that can be a big motivator for you know, seeking some support and help themselves.
And then that's all
change.
That's all incumbent on the person actually recognising the gravity of their actions, acknowledging
Absolutely.
What they're doing, and having that willingness to change.
That's right. And so if they're sitting in a position of that destructive entitlement, that they have strong senses of ownership or see themselves that they're in fact lost, there is an absence of empathy for the people that they share a life with, well, they're all very poor indicators at that point unless those things can change, we're not likely to have any motivation for behaviour change.
That's right. Now, finally, in reaching the end of our discussion, Jennifer, what advice would you give to people or couples who may feel that they are not as close or connected as they once used to be?
There's probably a couple of points. One is, the important thing is to notice what's happening in your relationship, and I would always recommend that people take early action. Sometimes couples wait far too long and there's too much water under the bridge. The foundations of trust and safety have been eroded to a point that there really isn't a way back.
Yeah.
And so early intervention is always the better way to go, and you know, not waiting until things have really got dire before you seek help. And just to know that there is good support out there, and that you can make some, and I certainly have witnessed this over many years, mm-hmm. that you can really turn some of these challenging problems around and make a difference.
So there's no problem without a solution.
No, even if, you know, ultimately you do decide to separate, it's also about even knowing how to separate well in
yeah.
a way that doesn't leave, you know, the partners, you know, completely stripped and broken.
That's right. Well, Jennifer, thank you for such an insightful discussion. You've given us plenty of food for thought and a lot of information to help us evaluate our relationship. It's been a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you so much, Ola. It's been great to talk with you.
Welcome back, everyone. You're still tuned to Community Connect on 92.1 FM, the Muslim Community Radio. And we've just heard from couples and family therapist at Relationships Australia New South Wales, Jennifer Douglas, who gave us some professional yet practical advice on building and maintaining healthy relationships and picking up the distress signs of a relationship in trouble. Certainly plenty of food for thought given there and some important points to reflect on in terms of evaluating our own personal relationships. I hope all that information was well received and will come in to serve you well at some point or another. But with that said, it is time for me to bid you all farewell for another afternoon, thanking you all for tuning in. I look forward to the next time we will be connecting on Community Connect. Until then, please take care and have a wonderful evening.